The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Hold it right there! Kay, you're going on report, asshole. Bringing a goddamn hooker on a delivery run?
And so it begins.
No, this is how it all ends.
Just in case anything went wrong.
Which it obviously did.
Sadly, yes. Almost immediately after launching, the missiles went wildly off course and hit Paris and Beijing. One landed in the Pacific Ocean.
Where was that again? Were the birds hot?
Edward. May I call you Ed? Alas, I truly dislike bloodshed. And you can still leave here alive? We know the man you are climbing with is an escaped convict. We only want him, not you, Ed. Not you. Stop protecting your friend. Tell us where he is, and you go free.
You got the wrong guy. Don't have a climbing partner. Work alone. I'm not the guy you want.
See? All you have to do is ask correctly, and civilians will tell you anything you need to know.
No, wait. Wait, I lied. I have a climbing partner.
No, you don't.
This is now a thermonuclear device, boosted by a tritium injector. The fireball alone will be 10 blocks wide, and the blast will spread over 100 miles.
Praise be to Allah.
Red alert. There's a super stallion on a parade ground getting ready to leave. Cargo must be Calvano.
Can't see it. There's too much flame and smoke.
We're on the way. Stay lucid. Got them, Lines. Their base is at Black Rock Mesa in McHenry County, about 50 miles deep in the heart of the Badlands.
In a world rife with human suffering, a nuclear madman pursues his twisted dream of salvation. Stonyman 92, Capital Offensive.
And now, our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The Last Gunfighter. Narrated by Ken Jackson. With performances by James Konacek, Michael Replogle, Jonathan Watkins, Nanette Savard, Tim Getman, Stephen Carpenter, David Coyne, Lily David, Colleen Delaney, Terrence Aselford, Jeff Baker, Thomas Penny, Richard Rowan, and Mort Shelby. The Last Gunfighter, number 12, Renegades.
Brown County, Texas, and all the violence that had taken place there, was a long way behind Frank Morgan now. The man, sometimes known as the Drifter, had lived up to his name, riding southward toward the Rio Grande, taking his time, in no hurry to get where he was going, wherever that was. Perhaps someplace where his past might not catch up to him, a haven where he could go unrecognized. But as idyllic as that sounded, Frank Morgan knew there wasn't much chance that he would ever find such a sanctuary. It was hard to blend in when you were the last of the really fast guns. Some of the others were still alive. Wyatt Earp, Bat Masterson, and Smoke Jensen were three that Frank could think of. Somehow, they had managed to settle down. John Wesley Hardin was still alive, too, but he was in prison. Bill Hickok, Ben Thompson, Doc Holliday, Luke Short, they were all dead, along with most of the other shootists and pistoliers who had made names for themselves at one time or another on the frontier. It was a sad time, in a way. A dying time. But a man couldn't stop the march of progress and so-called civilization. Nor was Frank Morgan the sort of hombre to brood about it and cling to the fading shadows of what once had been. He looked to the future, not the past. Right now, Frank was hopeful that the near future meant finding a warm, hospitable place to spend the winter. It was November, and up north, the snow and the frigid winds were already roaring down out of Canada to sweep across the mountains and the plains, all the way down to the Texas Panhandle. Hundreds of miles south of the Panhandle, however, here in the Rio Grande Valley of South Texas, the sky was blue, the sun was shining, and the temperature was quite pleasant. Frank even had the sleeves of his blue work shirt rolled up a couple of turns on his muscular forearms. He was a lean, well-built man of middle years, with gray streaking the thick dark hair under his Stetson. His range clothes were of good quality, as was his saddle. A Colt 45 was holstered on his hip, and the stock of a Winchester stuck up from a saddle sheath under his right leg. He rode a fine-looking Appaloosa called Stormy and led a dun-colored pack horse. The big shaggy cur named Wolf padded alongside him as Frank rode down a trail that cut its way through the thick chaparral covering the mostly flat landscape. Frank didn't know exactly where he was, but he thought he must be getting close to the Rio Grande. Some sleepy little border village would be a good spot to pass the winter, he mused.
Cool beer, tortillas and beans and chili. Maybe a pretty señorita or two to keep me company.
It sounded fine to Frank. Maybe not heaven, but likely as close as a gunfighter like him would ever get. Into every heavenly vision, though, a little hell had to intrude. The distant popping of gunfire suddenly came to Frank's ears. He reined in and frowned. The shots continued, coming fast and furious. They were still a ways off, but they were getting closer, without a doubt. He heard the rumble of hoofbeats, too. Some sort of running gun battle, Frank decided, and it was running straight toward him. He had never been one to dodge trouble. There just wasn't any backup in his nature. Instead, he nudged his heels into Stormy's sides and sent the Appaloosa trotting forward. Whatever was coming at him, Frank Morgan would go right out to meet it. Now he could see dust clouds boiling in the air ahead of him, kicked up by all the horses he heard. A moment later, the trail he was following intersected a road at a sharp angle. The pursuit was on the road itself, which was wide enough for a couple of wagons and a half dozen or so riders. Only one wagon came toward Frank, a buckboard that swayed and bounced as it careened along the road. The dust from the hooves of the team pulling it obscured the occupants to a certain extent, but Frank thought he saw two men on the buckboard, one handling the reins, while the other twisted around on the seat and fired a rifle back at the men giving chase. There were more than a dozen of those, Frank saw. He estimated the number at 20. They rode bunched up, the ones in the lead banging away at the fleeing buckboard with six guns. The gap between hunter and hunted was about 50 yards, too far for accurate handgun fire, especially from the saddle of a racing horse. But the riflemen on the buckboard didn't seem to be having much better luck. The group of riders surged on without slowing. Frank had no idea who any of these men were and didn't know which side he ought to take in this fight. But he'd always had a natural sympathy for the underdog, so he didn't like the idea of 2 against 20. He liked it even less when one of the horses in the team suddenly went down, probably the result of stepping in a prairie dog hole. The two men who had been in the buckboard flew through the air like rag dolls. Frank sent Stormy surging forward at a gallop. He didn't know if the men had survived the wreck or not, but it was a cinch they were out of the fight, at least for the moment, and wouldn't survive the next few seconds unless somebody helped them. He drew the Winchester and guided Stormy with his knees as he brought the rifle to his shoulder, firing as fast as he could work the repeater's lever. He put the first couple of bullets over the heads of the pursuers to see if they would give up the chase. When they kept attacking instead, and sent a couple of bullets whizzing past him, Frank had no choice but to lower his aim. Frank was close enough now to see that most of the pursuers wore high-crowned, broad-brimmed sombreros.
Banditos from the lunar border.
A few men in American range garb were mixed in the group, but that came as no surprise. Gringo outlaws sometimes crossed the Rio and fell in with gangs of Mexican raiders. A man who was tough enough and ruthless enough and good enough with a gun could usually find a home for himself with others of his kind, no matter where he was. Frank's bullets laced into the crowd of gunmen in the road. Two of the bandits plunged off their horses as Frank's shots ripped through them, and a couple of others sagged in their saddles and dropped out of the fight, obviously wounded. But the odds were still on their side, and after a moment of hesitation, they attacked again, firing as they came toward the overturned wagon. Both of the men who had been thrown from the wreck staggered to their feet as Frank came closer. He didn't know how badly they were hurt, but at least they were conscious and able to move around. They stumbled toward the shelter of the buckboard as bullets flew around them. While Stormy was still galloping, Frank swung down from the saddle, as good a running dismount as anyone could make. He had the Winchester in his left hand.
Stormy, get out of here. You too, Wolf, go.
Frank ran to the wagon and joined the two men who were already crouched behind him, firing revolvers at the charging banditos. The buckboard was on its side, turned crossways in the road. The horses had struggled back to their feet, except for the one with the broken leg, and they lunged and reared in their traces, maddened by the gunfire and the reeking clouds of powder smoke that drifted through the air. A couple of them had been wounded. Frank rested his Winchester on the buckboard and opened fire again, placing his shots carefully now that he had a chance to aim. One of the raiders flipped backward out of the saddle as if he had been swatted by a giant hand, and another fell forward over his mount's neck before slipping off and landing under the horse's slashing hooves. Bullets pounded into the buckboard like a deadly hailstorm of lead. The thick boards stopped most of them, but a few of the rounds punched through, luckily missing Frank and his two companions. The shots from the men fighting alongside him were taking a toll on the attackers as well. Less than half of the banditos were unscathed now. The others had been either killed or wounded. The Winchester ran dry. Frank dropped it and drew his Colt. He triggered twice and was rewarded by the sight of another rider plummeting from the saddle. The gang of banditos had had enough. They wheeled their horses, still snapping shots at the buckboard as they did so, and then lit a shuck out of there. Frank and the two men threw a few shots after them to hurry them on their way, but the riders were out of pistol range in a matter of moments.
Keep riding, you bastards! Don't stop until you get back across the border to hell, as far as I'm concerned!
The man was stocky and grizzled, with a graying, close-cropped beard. Most of his head was bald. His hands and face had a weathered, leathery look, an indication that he had spent most of his life outdoors. The second man was younger, taller, and clean-shaven, but he bore a resemblance to the older man that Frank recognized right away. He pegged them as father and son, or perhaps uncle and nephew. Both men were dressed in well-kept range clothes that would have looked better if they hadn't been covered in trail dust. They had the appearance of successful cattlemen about them. Frank spotted the other rifle lying on the ground about 20 feet away.
Better pick up that repeater, just in case they come back.
They won't be back. Bunch of no-good cowardly dogs. Travel in a pack and won't attack unless the odds are 10-1 in their favor.
And we cut those odds down in a hurry.
The riders had disappeared in the distance now, without even any dust showing. Deciding that they were truly gone, Frank walked out from behind the buckboard and went to check on the men who had fallen from their horses during the fight. He counted 7 of them, all of them dead. 5 of the men were Mexicans, typical south of the border hard cases. The other 2 were American cousins of the same sort. Frank checked their pockets, found nothing but spare shells for their guns and some coins. The younger man had just put the injured horse out of its misery. Frank walked back to the buckboard. The younger man began unhitching the team and trying to calm the horses.
Who are you, mister? Why'd you jump into that fracas on our side?
My name's Morgan, and I just thought it looked like you could use a hand. I never have liked an unfair fight.
Well, the boy and me are much obliged. My name's Cecil Tolliver. That's my son, Ben.
Howdy. Wouldn't be Frank Morgan, would it?
Yeah, I'm Frank Morgan.
I don't mean to sound ignorant, mister, but I don't reckon I heard of you.
That's because you've never read any dime novels. Mr. Morgan here is a famous gunfighter.
Never had time for such foolishness, boy. I was too busy trying to build the rock and tea into a decent spread. You was the one who always had your nose in the Police Gazette.
Most of what's been written about me in those dime novels and the illustrated weeklies was a pack of lies made up by gents who don't know much about the real West.
You can't deny, though, that you've had your share of gunfights.
More than my share.
Well, we're much obliged for the help, whether you're famous or not. If you hadn't come along when you did, I reckon Almansar's boys would have done for me and Ben.
Almansar. I'm not familiar with the name. Is he the leader of that gang of banditos?
You could call him that. He runs the rancho where those gunnies work.
Those don't look like vaqueros or cowhands to me.
That's because Almansar's a low-down skunk who hires killers rather than decent hombres.
Sounds like you don't care for the man.
I got no use for him. Him and me been feuding ever since I came to this part of the country, nigh on 30 years ago. Almansar specializes in wet cattle, if you know what I mean.
You don't know that Don Felipe has been rustling our cow's paw?
I know all I need to know. Almansar's a thief and a bloody-handed reaver. And this ain't the first time he's tried to have me killed. Another thing, I don't want to hear you call him that bastard by his Christian name again. He ain't our friend and never has been.
What about when you first settled here? I've heard you say more than once, Paul, that without Senor Almansar's help, the Comanches would have lifted your hair back in those days.
That was a long time ago. Things change.
Where were you men headed?
Back to the Rock and Tea. We've been to San Rosa for supplies. All the boxes done bounced out back along the road when that bunch jumped us and we had to take off so fast. We're lucky the damn buckboard didn't rattle itself to pieces.
San Rosa's the nearest town?
Yep. Right on the river about 5 miles upstream from here. The name's fouled up. It ought to be Santa Rosa, but the fella who stuck the name on it didn't savvy Mex talk. Still a pretty nice place.
I'll pay it a visit. I was looking for a place to get something to eat and somewhere to stay.
You don't have to go to Santa Rosa for that. Help us set that wagon up, and then you can ride on to the Rock and Tea with us. You'll be our guest as long as you want to stay, Mr. Morgan.
Call me Frank, and I wouldn't want to impose.
Impose, hell! After what you done to help us, I consider it a personal insult if you don't let us feed you and put you up for a spell.
Well, in that case, I accept.
Stormy came out of the chaparral, followed by Wolf. Tolliver and Ben looked with admiration at the Big Appaloosa, but were more wary where Wolf was concerned.
That critter looks a mite like a cross between a wolf and a grizzly bear.
He's all dog. Just be sure you've been introduced properly before you go to pet him.
Frank took his rope from the saddle and tied one end to the buckboard. Ben saw what he was doing and brought over the surviving three members of the team. The rope was tied to their harness, and the horses did the work as the buckboard was soon pulled upright again. Frank hitched Stormy into the empty spot in the team.
What about the dead men?
I'll be damned if I'm going to get their blood all over my buckboard. When we get to the ranch, I'll send a rider to San Rosa to notify the law. In the meantime, a couple of my hands can come back out here with a work wagon to load up the carcasses. The undertaker can come to the ranch and get them for planting.
There's law in San Rosa?
Yeah, a town marshal. And there's a company of rangers that's been using the town as their headquarters for a spell while they're trying to track down some bandits who've been raising hell around here.
Tolliver and Ben climbed onto the seat of the buckboard. Frank tied his pack horse on at the back of the vehicle, then sat down with his legs dangling off the rear. Wolf jumped onto the buckboard and settled down beside him. Tolliver got the team moving and drove on toward his ranch, the Rocking Tee. Frank saw cattle in the chaparral as the buckboard rolled along. They were longhorns, the sort of tough, hardy breed that was required in this brushy country.
How much stock have you been losing lately?
Not that much.
Not that much at one time, I mean. Half a dozen here, half a dozen there. It sure as hell adds up.
The Rangers haven't been able to get a line on the wide loopers?
Nah, they're too busy looking for the Black Scorpion.
The Black Scorpion? What's that?
You mean, who's that? You recollect what I said about the Rangers hunting for a gang of owl hoots? Well, the Black Scorpion is the boss outlaw. Son of a bitch who heads up that gang.
Now you're talking like the one who's been reading dime novels, Pa.
The Black Scorpion's real, damn it. Folks have seen him. Dressed all in black and wearing a mask, leading that bloodthirsty bunch of desperados.
I'll believe it when I see it. Seems to me that Captain Wedge and the Rangers are wasting their time looking for phantoms, and they ought to be out hunting down rustlers.
Well, I ain't gonna argue with that. Wish they'd do something about those damn rustlers, too.
Is it possible the Black Scorpion could be responsible for the rustling?
Well, folks have thought about that. Me and some of the other ranchers around here have lost stock the same nights that the Black Scorpion's gang was reported to be marauding on the other side of the border. The varmint can't be in two places at the same time.
No, I reckon not.
The sun was low in the sky by the time the buckboard reached the headquarters of the Rocking Tea. Frank saw a large whitewashed house sitting in the shade of several cottonwood trees. Behind it were a couple of barns, several corrals, a bunkhouse, a cook shack, a blacksmith shop, a chicken coop, and some storage buildings. There was a vegetable garden off to one side of the house, and beyond it a small orchard filled with fruit trees.
Oh! Yep, this is it. Welcome to the Rockin' Tea, Mr. Morgan.
Several men walked out of one of the barns and came toward the buckboard. At the same time, the front door of the ranch house opened and four women emerged. Two of them were fairly young and had the same sandy-colored hair that Ben did. One of the older women had gray hair, while the other was a stunning brunette.
Come on, I'll introduce you to the women folk.
Frank slid off the back of the buckboard and followed Tolliver and Ben to the house.
Ladies, this here is Frank Morgan. Mr. Morgan, allow me to present my wife, Pegeen, and our daughters, Deborah and Jessie. And this is Pegeen's sister, Roanne.
Ladies, the honor and the pleasure are mine.
We're pleased to meet you, Mr. Morgan.
Pegeen Tolliver was oldest of the four women, the one with gray hair. She was still a handsome woman, though, and the same lines of timeless beauty to be found in her face were also present in the faces of her sister and her daughters. Roanne, who was around 30, Frank estimated, was especially lovely. There wasn't that much age difference between her and her nieces, who were both between 20 and 25. Fine-looking young frontier women. And both already married, too, judging by the rings on their fingers. Frank noted that Roanne wore no ring at all, for whatever that was worth.
My sons-in-law, that's Darryl Forrest with Jesse and Nick Holmes with Deborah. They're both top hands.
Glad to meet you, boys.
Frank Morgan? That was the name, sir.
That's right, Darryl. He's the drifter.
Cecil, you went to town for supplies, but I don't see any in the buckboard. And one of the horses is missing. Does that spotted horse belong to Mr. Morgan?
That's right. The supplies are scattered up and down the road this side of San Rosa where they got jolted out when we had to run from a bunch of gunmen.
Are you or Ben hurt?
Nah. Reckon we'll have some bruises tomorrow. We got throwed off the buckboard when it turned over during the chase. But Mr. Morgan came along right about then and helped us fight off those those no-good skunks. Nick, send a rider to San Rosa to tell Flam Jarvis that we've got the bodies of seven of them owl hoots out there waiting for the undertaker.
Seven bodies? But I don't see...
That's because they're all still out there on the road right now. Once you send a man to town, you and Darryl take a couple of hands and a work wagon and go out there and get the corpses.
Thank you for helping my husband and my son, Mr. Morgan. I hope you plan to stay for supper and spend the night with us. A little hospitality is the least we can do for you.
Yes, ma'am. Your husband already told me I'd be staying a while, and I sure appreciate the kindness.
You're very welcome. Well, come on inside. I'll bet you could use a cup of coffee.
Ma'am, coffee is one of my biggest weaknesses.
Frank went into the house with Tolliver, Ben, and the women, while Darryl and Nick hurried off to carry out Tolliver's orders. The women went off to the kitchen through a swinging door. The house was well-appointed, with thick rugs on the floor and heavy overstuffed furniture. A massive stone fireplace dominated one wall of the parlor. A tremendous spread of longhorns adorned the wall above the fireplace. Several sets of deer antlers were attached to the wall as well, and rifles and shotguns hung on pegs. A cavalry saber was also on display. Cecil Tolliver noticed Frank's interest in it.
I carried that when I rode with Jeb Stuart, Fitz Lee, and Mac Brannan during the war, Mr. Morgan. That was before I came out here to Texas.
I thought I detected a hint of Virginia in your voice, sir.
Were you in the war?
I was. But that was a long time ago.
Indeed it was. After supper, I'll break out a bottle of brandy I've been saving, and we'll drink to old times. They weren't always the best of times, but they made us what we are.
I reckon that's true enough. I suppose you've had your hands riding patrol at night, trying to stop the rustling.
Damn right I have. All it's gotten me is one puncher shot dead and another laid up with a bullet-busted shoulder.
So the rustlers don't hesitate to shoot?
Not at all. Anyway, this is a big spread. Take an army to cover all of it at night. But I can't just call in my men and throw the ranch wide open to the damn wide loopers.
No, can't do that.
If you have any ideas, Mr. Morgan, we'd be glad to hear them.
What I ought to do is hire some gunmen and ride across the Rio to wipe out Almanzar. I bet our rustling troubles would stop then.
You'll do no such thing, Cecil Tolliver. You can't take the law into your own hands. And besides, you don't know that Don Felipe is behind the rustling.
When we first come out here, Peg, there wasn't no law but what a man could carry in his own fist. We did all right in those days.
We nearly got killed more than once fighting off Comanches and outlaws. You leave such things to the Rangers. Now, I still need those supplies. Come morning, Cecil, you'll have to go back to town and replace the ones you lost.
All right, all right. But I'm taking more of the boys with me next time. And if Almanzar sends his gun wolves after us again, they'll get even more of a fight than they got this time.
Deborah and Jesse came out of the kitchen carrying trays with cups and saucers on them. Steam lifted from the coffee in the cups, and Frank smiled in appreciation of the delicious aroma. The coffee tasted as good as it smelled. Frank sat in a comfortable armchair and sipped from his cup. A time or two, he caught Roanne watching him with undisguised interest. An unmarried woman of her age was considered an old maid out here, but there was nothing old about her. To be honest, the boldness of her gaze wasn't very maidenly either. Frank returned her looks with an interest of his own. She was a mighty attractive lady. They hadn't been sitting around the parlor for very long when a sudden rataplan of hoofbeats welled up outside. A large group of riders was approaching the ranch. Tolliver and Ben set their cups aside and stood up quickly. So did Frank. No shouts of alarm had sounded from the ranch hands, but these days, no one was taking a chance. With his hand on the butt of the Colt at his hip, Tolliver strode to the front door. Ben and Frank were right behind him. As the three men stepped out onto the porch, they saw a group of about 25 men entering the ranch yard. The rider in the lead was a big barrel-chested man with a raw-boned, hawk-like face and a shock of white hair under a black Stetson. The last of the fading light revealed a badge pinned to his coat. Frank recognized the star set inside a circle, the emblem of the Texas Rangers.
Captain Wedge! Good to see you and your boys. Could have used you around a little while ago.
Why's that, Tolliver?
Because my boy and me were jumped by a gang of Almanzar's gunmen from across the border. If it wasn't for Frank Morgan here, Ben and me would probably be buzzard bait by now.
Frank Morgan, eh?
That's right.
Heard of you. Don't think there's any paper out on you right now, though.
There never has been, except on trumped-up charges that were proven false.
Pretty much what I figured. Heard, too, that you'd given the Rangers a hand now and then.
I'm a law-abiding man. I do what I can to help when I'm called on.
Good to know. Tolliver, what's this about you and the boy being attacked by Almanzar's riders?
They jumped us while we was coming back to the ranch from San Rosa. We'd been to town to pick up some supplies. A whole bunch of them came on a sudden, like yelling and shooting. We tried to get away and make a fight of it at the same time, but our buckboard turned over. Then Mr. Morgan rode up and took a hand in the game. We knocked down enough of the bastards so that the rest of them turned tail.
Sounds like you're lucky to be alive.
Yeah, that's the way I figure it, too.
How do you know the men who jumped you work for Almanzar?
Who else would have it in for me? Almanzar and me been crossways with each other a long time.
What about the Black Scorpion?
What about him?
Could the men who attacked you have been part of the Scorpion's gang?
That thought crossed my mind, too, even though I'm not sure I believe in the Black Scorpion.
Oh, he's real enough.
I didn't see no sign of any masked man leading the gang. They were just a bunch of border toughs. The sort of hard cases Almansar hires to make life miserable for me.
The reason I ask is the men and I have been trailing a Black Scorpion since yesterday. He and his gang raided a ranch on the other side of San Rosa. They were coming in this direction, and it seems logical to me that they could have run into you and your son.
No. Those gunnies work for Almansar.
Well, ladies, after a long day on the trail, you sure are a sight for sore eyes. If I may be so bold as to say so.
You may. Hello, Captain. Will you and your men be staying for supper?
Well, that sounds mighty nice, ma'am. But we're on the trail of some bad
man. You can't follow the trail very well at night. Join us for supper, Captain. Your men can eat in the bunkhouse with the hands.
That Chinaman who cooks for you probably won't be very happy about having that many extra mouths to feed.
He'll survive. There's plenty of room for your men to bunk in the barn, too. We'll find a bed for you in the house.
Well, I'm much obliged, Oliver. And on behalf of my men, I accept. Light for a spell, boys. We're spending the night here on the Rockin' Tee.
The rangers dismounted and tended to their mounts, unsaddling the horses and turning them into one of the corrals by the barns.
I'd like to see Almansar's Nighthawks come raiding now with a couple dozen rangers on the place. They'd get a mighty warm welcome if they did.
A big work wagon rattled into the yard, pulled by a team of heavy draft horses. Darryl Forrest and Nick Holmes were on the wagon seat, with Darryl handling the reins. Three punchers on horseback trailed the wagon. Frank recalled Tolliver's orders to his sons-in-law to go out and recover the bodies of the outlaws who had been killed. Even though the last of the twilight had faded, enough illumination came from the doors and windows of the ranch house for Frank to be able to see that the uncovered back of the wagon was empty.
What happened?
Those bodies weren't there.
What? What the hell are those outlaw carcasses?
You'll have to tell us, Pa. We drove Pert near all the way to San Rosa looking for them, just in case you were a little off target about where they fell. And there's no sign of them anywhere up and down the road.
The rest of the skunks came back for them. That's the only explanation that makes any sense. That damn Almansar must have given orders that if any of his gunnies bit the dust, the rest were to recover the bodies so they couldn't be traced back to him.
Oh, I was hoping to get a look at those bodies. Thought there might be some of them I'd recognize.
Go right out in the morning, and I'll show you where the fight happened. Maybe you can pick up the trail of the rest of the gang.
The ranch hands took care of the wagon and the team, while Frank, Wedge, and the members of the Tolliver family went inside. The women had done quite a job on short notice, perhaps helped out by that Chinese cook Wedge had mentioned. The long hardwood table in the dining room was loaded down with platters of food. Everyone moved to the table. Tolliver held a chair for Peggy, while Darryl and Nick did likewise for their wives. Rowan didn't have a husband here, though, so being the gentleman he was, Frank moved to perform the gesture for her. Unfortunately, Captain Wedge had had the same idea and started forward, and there was an awkward moment when both men hesitated. Then Wedge stepped back slightly and gave a half wave, indicating to Frank that he should go ahead.
Thank you. Why don't you sit here beside me, Mr. Morgan?
Thank you, ma'am. It'd be my pleasure.
You don't have to call me ma'am.
Well, I haven't heard your last name.
That's right, you haven't. It's Williamson.
I'll call you Miss Williamson, then.
Why don't you just call me Roanne?
All right. That's a mighty pretty name.
We'll say grace. Heavenly Father, thank you for this food and all the other blessings you bestowed upon us. We ask that you watch over us and protect us from the trials and travails of this world and help us follow your teachings so we'll be prepared for the next world. And if it pleases you, cast your wrath down on any no-good skunks from below the border.
Cecil?
Anyway, Lord, bless us and keep us under your watchful eye. Amen.
Not meaning to pry, Morgan, but what brings you to the border country?
I'm just drifting, Captain.
Hence the name by which some people know you.
I've always been a mite fiddle-footed by inclination, and circumstances have often been such that it was best to ride on.
You mean that you've run into a lot of trouble over the years because of your reputation?
As a lawman, you must know there are a lot of hotheads who fancy themselves as fast guns.
And you probably bump up against them just about everywhere you go.
It happens more often than I'd like.
You could hang up your gun.
You can't be serious, Captain. If Mr. Morgan did that, he'd probably be dead within a week. There must be dozens of men who'd try to come after him if word ever got out that he'd put away his gun.
Probably more like hundreds.
It wouldn't be safe. I've made more than my share of enemies.
The West is settling down. There's law and order now.
I didn't see any out there on the road this afternoon when those gunnies were doing their best to ventilate us.
The Rangers can't be everywhere at once. And it's my judgment that the Black Scorpion and his gang represent the biggest threat around here, not Don Felipe Almanzar. And I'm still not convinced it wasn't the Scorpion's gang that jumped you.
I'm convinced, and that's all I need to know.
Gentlemen, please, let's just enjoy our supper and leave the wrangling until later.
Why, you're absolutely right, Mrs. Tolliver. And this meal is delicious.
No more was said about Don Felipe Almanzar or the Black Scorpion. The topic shifted to the political situation across the border in Mexico. El Presidente Porfirio Diaz had ruled the country for a decade now, after an earlier stint in power as well, and he ran things with an iron fist, enforcing his will by means of his tight control over the Mexican army. But despite, or perhaps because of, Diaz's heavy hand, there was always a certain level of unrest in the country. And the farther away from the capital of Mexico City, the weaker Diaz's control over the population. In northern Mexico, across the Rio Grande from Texas, a frontier police force known as Rurales were in charge. Although Diaz sometimes sent in troops from the regular army to quiet things down if too much trouble began cropping up. One thing could be said for Mexican politics. It was always colorful and never boring. Frank didn't have much interest in any politics, however, having learned from experience that most men who would seek political jobs weren't qualified to hold them. Many were long-winded gas bags with fewer scruples than a coyote. Diaz might be a ruthless dictator, Frank thought, but at least he was more honest about it, ruling with guns rather than slick words and smiles that hid nothing but lies.
I believe I'll walk out to the barn, check on my horse before it's time to turn in.
Frank went into the barn, where a single lantern was burning with its wick turned low, and looked into Stormy's stall. Wolf lay asleep in the hay and stirred fitfully without waking. The Appaloosa seemed fine and nuzzled his nose against Frank's shoulder. Frank scratched the horse's ears for a few moments and then turned to go. He stopped short, his hand moving instinctively toward his gun, when he saw the shadowy figure looming in the doorway of the barn. The figure moved into the light, and Frank edged his hand away from the colt, hoping that Roanne Williamson hadn't noticed his reaction. She was too sharp-eyed to have missed it, though.
I'm sorry, Mr. Morgan. I didn't mean to startle you.
If I'm to call you Roanne, then you have to call me Frank. And I didn't mean to be so jumpy. I reckon it's a habit.
I imagine the life you've led makes you quite cautious.
I keep my eyes and ears open. Fact is, I should have heard you coming before you got to the barn.
I don't make a lot of noise. Even though I live in town now, I was raised on a ranch. When I was a little girl, one of the hands was a breed who taught me to be as stealthy as an Indian. It was quite thrilling when it wasn't dangerous.
I expect so. But you said you live in town. I thought you lived here on the Rockin' T with your sister and her family.
I visit frequently, but my home is in San Rosa. I have a little dress shop there. It won't ever make me rich, but there's enough trade so that I do all right. At least I did.
What do you mean by that?
Nothing. I'm just tired. It's been a long day. But I like to get a breath of fresh air before I retire for the evening.
So do I. That's why I came out here.
Yes. The air in the parlor is anything but fresh after Cecil and the boys fire up those cheroots of theirs. Tonight, of course, they have Captain Wedge with them, too.
The captain seems fond of you. I didn't mean to poach on his territory when I went to hold your chair for you.
Believe me, you didn't. Although, I think I should resent being referred to as territory.
Oh, just a figure of speech. I didn't mean any offense.
None taken.
Your sister and brother seem to get along well enough with Captain Wedge.
He commands a troop of Texas Rangers. What would you have them do when he comes into their home?
So you're saying there is some friction between them?
Captain Wedge is a lawman. Cecil respects that. Cecil is also a naturally hospitable man. And I don't really want to talk about Captain Wedge anymore.
Where's this ranch you grew up on?
Over on the Nueces River. Even brushier country than around here. Nothing but longhorns could ever live on it, let alone thrive.
I know what you mean. I've seen that thorn brush over there.
Where are you from, Frank?
I grew up in Parker County, up north Texas. Good long way from here.
Yes. Texas is a big place. They say you can ride for weeks and still not leave the state.
True enough, if you're going in the right direction.
But you've been a lot of other places in your life, haven't you?
Pretty much everywhere west of the Mississippi. From the Rio Grande to the Milk River up in Montana.
Do you think you'll ever settle down and stay in one place?
I reckon nearly every man thinks that about himself. Even the drifters like me. We believe that the day'll come when the urge to always be moving on will leave us. Just a matter of time and finding the right place. But time runs out, and the right place is still somewhere over the next hill. And before you know it, there aren't any more chances.
That's a sad way to look at it.
Sad, but realistic.
But what about you? Your chances haven't run out yet.
Not so far. But nobody ever promised us tomorrow, either.
You're not at all the sort of man I thought a famous gunfighter would be, Frank.
I'll take that as a compliment.
That's the way I meant it. I'd better be getting back inside. Good night.
Good night, ma'am. Roanne.
Roanne smiled, turned, and walked back to the house. Frank stayed there in the barn for a few minutes, giving her a chance to go up to her room before he went in. Then he returned to the house and found that Cecil Tolliver was waiting for him, sitting alone in a chair in front of the fireplace.
Well, I'll show you to your room.
Everybody else turned in already?
That's right. It was a long day and everybody's tired.
You seem to get along well with Captain Wedge.
Yeah. Man's got to get along with the law these days. Things ain't like they used to be.
Frank passed the night in a deep, dreamless slumber. When he woke up in the morning, before dawn, as was his habit, he was refreshed, although his muscles were a little stiff from not being accustomed to sleeping on such a soft mattress. Despite the early hour, the smells of coffee and bacon were in the air when Frank went downstairs. Ranch folk were nearly always up before the sun. He found Captain Wedge sitting at the table with Tolliver, Ben, Darrell, and Nick. Roanne came in from the kitchen carrying a coffee pot. As she began to fill the cups in front of the men, she nodded toward an empty chair.
Have a seat, Frank. The food'll be out in a minute.
Good morning. Hope you slept well.
Very well, thank you.
She finished pouring the coffee and went back to the kitchen.
Well, what are your plans, Frank? You know you're welcome to stay here as long as you want.
I was hoping Mr. Morgan would agree to come with me and the troop.
Am I under arrest, Captain?
Hell no. I thought maybe you'd come with us and help us track down the Black Scorpion and his gang.
You want me to help the Rangers?
Word gets around. I hear tell that you've helped out the Rangers a couple of times before.
That's true. A young Ranger named Tyler Beaumont befriended me. Helped me out when I was in a bad way. I figured it was only fair to return the favor.
I realize I haven't done you any favors, but we could use a good man, especially if we catch up to the Black Scorpion. You wouldn't have to be sworn in as a ranger. We could do it sort of unofficial-like.
All right. I reckon I can do that.
Good. I appreciate it, Morgan.
After eating a large breakfast washed down with several cups of coffee, the men went outside. The ranger troop had already eaten in the bunkhouse, and the lawmen were now saddling their horses and getting ready to ride.
Saddle my horse so I can show the captain where those bastards jumped us yesterday.
I'm going along, too.
No, you ain't. There's work to do here on the ranch, and I'm counting on you and Darrell and Nick to see that gets done. It's been too many times lately, boy, when I've gone looking for you and ain't found you. You're sneaking off to town to have a drink. I'll find out about it, you know.
I haven't been sneaking off to town, Pa. You know me better than that.
I thought I did anyway.
And you can't say that I haven't gotten my work done, can you?
Oh, I reckon not.
Within half an hour after breakfast was finished, the Rangers were ready to ride out. Frank joined them, leading Stormy over to the group, with Wolf trotting alongside, and then he swung up into the saddle. As he did so, Roanne came out onto the porch. He noticed that she now wore a traveling outfit.
Are you going back to San Rosa this morning, Miss Williamson?
That's right. Darrell is bringing my buggy around right now. I'll go part of the way with the Rangers and then on into town.
By yourself? Countryside seems a little troubled for that.
Peggy and Cecil agree with you. That's why they're sending along a couple of hands to watch over me.
Be careful anyway.
Move out!
With the hoofbeats of their horses sounding like rolling thunder, the Rangers rode out of the ranch yard and headed toward the spot of the ambush the day before.
Go on, Frank. I'll be fine.
All right, then. But I'll see you again.
I certainly hope so.
Frank put the Appaloosa into an easy lope and followed the Rangers and Cecil Tolliver, with Wolf padding after him. The large group of men rode northwest toward San Rosa, following the river and raising a large cloud of dust. Frank looked over his shoulder and saw more dust rising behind them. That would be from Roanne's buggy and the mounts of the two men riding with her, about a quarter of a mile behind the Rangers. Frank kept alert for the sound of shots. If he heard any, he would turn and gallop back to help make sure Roanne stayed safe. In the meantime, he moved up alongside Cecil Tolliver and Captain Wedge at the head of the troop.
Then the gang looped around San Rosa after they hit that ranch. We lost their trail when we hit a rocky stretch a ways north of here. So you can see why I think it might have been the Scorpion's men who attacked you, Tolliver. They were right here in the area.
I don't believe it. They were Almanzar's men.
What if Don Felipe Almanzar is the Black Scorpion?
Damn it! That might be the answer. I wouldn't put anything past Almanzar.
Well, maybe. Why would Almanzar turn Owl Hoot? He's got a pretty good ranch on the other side of the Rio, from what I hear.
It's in his nature. He was born no good.
They reached the site of the gun battle a short time later. Landmarks were sparse in this flat, brushy country, but Frank recognized the place from a small clump of scrubby live oaks nearby. He saw the marks in the road where the buckboard had overturned, too. Tolliver pointed out the same marks to Captain Wedge.
Right there. That's where the buckboard wound up when it crashed. Ben and I got behind it and started banging away at the sons of bitches with our Colts. And a second later, Frank came galloping up and joined in the fracas.
If you look there in the road, you'll probably find bloodstains where the wounded man fell. Cecil's men probably didn't see the blood when they came out to recover the bodies, because the light was already bad.
Let's take a look.
True to Morgan's prediction, the bloodstains were easily found in the clear light of an autumn morning, even though someone had kicked dirt and gravel over them. Whoever had taken the bodies had tried to conceal the evidence that there was a fight here, but they had been in too much of a hurry to do a good job. Roanne's buggy rolled up, trailed by the two rocking T-hands. She hauled back on the reins and brought the buggy horse to a stop.
Was this where you were attacked, Cecil?
Sure is. There's some of the blood the polecat spilled when we ventilated him.
Well, since you gentlemen don't need me here, I'll go on to town.
You can see the tracks that bunch left.
There are a lot of tracks. This here's a well-traveled route.
Yeah, but look how they're all together.
We'll give it a try.
Wedge lifted a hand and waved for the troop to follow him. A few hundred yards farther on, the tracks left the road and cut north. With Frank, Wedge, and Tolliver in the lead, the Rangers followed them. The brush made for slow going, but in a way it helped with the tracking because from time to time the men spotted a broken branch that indicated a man on horseback had forced his way past. The morning stretched out, and the sun grew warmer as it rose higher in the sky. If this had been June or July instead of November, they would have been baking by now, Frank thought. The Rangers pushed on, with only an occasional stop to rest their horses. Toward noon, Wedge reined in, and Frank brought Stormy to a halt.
Damn it!
What's wrong?
I recognize these parts. We're just about back to the place where we lost the Black Scorpion's trail yesterday.
The Rangers rode on, and a few minutes later, they came to a dry creek bed that marked the border of a wide area of barren, rocky ground. The tracks they had been following disappeared onto the rocks.
Oh, this is it, all right.
How big is this stretch?
Half a mile wide, 3 or 4 miles long.
Raiders had to go somewhere. If we ride along the edge, we're bound to find their tracks.
Unless they split up and left one by one at different spots. One man can cover up his trail pretty well. Then they could rendezvous somewhere else and regroup. But we'll check it out. That's about all we can do.
You'll have to do it without me. I got a ranch to run, so I'll leave you to this chore. Frank, you going with Captain Wedge or coming back to the Rockin' Tee with us?
I think I'll stick with the captain a while longer. I've gotten a mite interested in this Black Scorpion fella.
Yeah, I wish you luck, men.
Quickly, Wedge issued commands, dividing his troop into two forces. They would circle the rocks in either direction, meeting up again on the far side. That would cut in half the time required to check all the way around the area.
If you find any tracks, fire 3 shots. We'll come a-running.
Sure, Captain. You do the same.
The party split up and resumed the search. Frank went with the group led by Wedge. They searched slowly and carefully, and it took until mid-afternoon before the Rangers rendezvoused on the far side of the rocks. Wedge's group hadn't found anything, and Frank could tell from the glum looks on the faces of the second group that their search had been equally futile.
Well, whoever they are, they've given us the slip again. They must have done like I said and snuck out of here one at a time.
You going back to San Rosa?
I reckon. Not much else we can do except wait for the Black Scorpion to hit somewhere else and hope we can get on his trail again.
I'll ride with you if that's all right.
Suit yourself.
The riders made their way back to the road. They were still several miles from San Rosa when the crackle of gunfire suddenly sounded to the south. Frank and Wedge reined in sharply, and the members of the ranger troop followed suit.
What in blazes? Sounds like a small war going on down there.
Is that shooting on this side of the river or on the Mexican side?
Hard to say. The Rio's a couple of miles in that direction. We'll go check it out.
The brush wasn't quite as thick here, so the rangers were able to move through it easier than they had earlier. The shooting didn't last long before it died away into an ominous silence. Frank glanced over at Wedge and saw that the captain's face was set in grim lines. Smoke began to rise in the sky ahead of them.
Damn it! There's a little farm down there, I recollect. The Black Scorpion must have raided it.
Why would an outlaw raid a farm? There wouldn't be enough loot there to make it worth the bullets.
Well, that's the sort of bloodthirsty mongrel the Scorpion is. He wants everybody on both sides of the border to be scared of him, so that he can come and go without anybody helping the law track him down. Every so often he raids some farm or small ranch just as an example of his power, to keep all the other settlers in line.
The rangers pushed on quickly, and after a few minutes of riding toward the smoke, they came in sight of its source, an adobe house that was blazing brightly inside. The thick earthen walls wouldn't burn, but the roof and the interior would, and that was what was happening. Off to one side of the burning building were several sheds and corrals that seemed to be untouched. Frank expected to find the bodies of women and kids, perhaps, and he wasn't looking forward to what he might see. As the rangers galloped up and reined in, however, Frank spotted only the sprawled shapes of a couple of men. And that was bad enough. Maybe worse, in fact, because if a family had lived here, the other members might still be inside that burning house.
Looks like the Hernandez brothers tried to fight back and got wiped out. Damn good thing they didn't have wives and kids. It would have been really bad.
They're the only ones who lived here?
Yeah, just a couple of harmless pepper bellies.
The dead men were lying face down, with the rifles they had dropped on the ground nearby. Wedge and Frank dismounted. The captain used the toe of his boot to roll the Hernandez brothers onto their backs. Both had lean, wolf-like features that were distorted by the grimaces of pain that death had frozen onto their faces. Judging by the bloodstains on their clothes, each man had been shot once.
The Scorpion thinks that running back across the border will keep the Rangers from coming after him. Well, he's wrong.
You don't have any jurisdiction in Mexico.
If you're worried about that, you can turn that spotted horse around and ride out, mister. As for us, we're going after the men who did this.
Wedge swung up into the saddle and kicked his horse into a run toward the Rio Grande, which was only a few hundred yards away. The Rangers followed him. Frank watched them go, then looked at Stormy and Wolf.
Sometimes I'm a damn fool.
With that, he mounted up and rode after the Rangers, thinking that neither the Appaloosa nor the Big Cur had disagreed with him. A few minutes later, Stormy splashed up out of the waters of the Rio Grande, and the drifter was in Mexico. Wolf emerged from the river, too, and paused to shake the water violently off his muscular, thick-furred body. Frank put the Appaloosa into a fast lope that quickly brought them up even with the Rangers. He made his way to the head of the group, next to Wedge.
I thought you weren't coming.
I've got just as much right to be over here as you do. In Mexico, you're a civilian just like me.
The way I figure it, this here badge gives me the right to go wherever I need to defend the state of Texas.
Frank wasn't going to waste any breath arguing with him. Instead, he kept his eyes on the tracks that the traders had left after wiping out the Hernandez brothers and torching their jacal. The vegetation was sparser on this side of the river, the ground sandier and more likely to take a print. Frank and the Rangers had no trouble following the trail. The trail led south from the Rio Grande for a mile or two and then swung back to the west. The sun sank toward the horizon and was swallowed by a bank of clouds, meaning that night would fall earlier than usual. Wedge had been setting a fast pace, but now he reined in and settled his horse into a deliberate walk.
We don't want to ride up their backsides before we know what's going on. They can't be too far ahead of us.
The clouds continued to move in, and a cool breeze freshened from the north. The advancing clouds brought the shadows of dusk with them.
Will they push on in the dark or make camp somewhere?
The terrain was a bit more rugged on this side of the border, as it sloped gradually upward toward a mountain range that rose in the west. The landscape was cut with arroyos that were dry nearly year-round, except during the infrequent rainstorms when they were prone to flooding. It was also dotted with occasional mesas and other upthrusts of stone. From time to time, a spiny ridge wound its way across the countryside.
Wait a minute.
What the hell is it?
Smell that?
Yeah. Yeah, smoke. Somebody up ahead of us has built a fire.
That sounds to me like the men we're after have decided to camp for the night.
I think you're right. Probably not more than a half a mile in front of us out of there. Everyone, dismount.
The rangers in the front of the group passed along the order to those farther back. They began to swing down from their horses. Frank dismounted as well. Wedge detailed a couple of men to hold the horses. Frank handed over Stormy's reins somewhat reluctantly.
Will that dog behave himself? Or will he start barking and give us away?
He'll behave if I tell him to. Quiet now, Wolf. You hear?
You talk to him almost like he was human.
I prefer his company to that of a lot of humans I've run into.
Now on foot, the ranger troop slipped stealthily toward the top of the ridge. When they reached the crest, Frank and Wedge knelt to take a look. Both men had keen eyesight, and it took them only a moment to spot the orange glow in the sky, emanating from a spot about a quarter of a mile ahead of them.
What'd I tell you about those bastards feeling like they're safe because they're on this side of the river?
That's a good-sized fire, all right. They must not think anybody's on their trail.
They're about to find out how wrong they are.
Wedge passed the word for the men to advance on foot. It wasn't necessary to tell them to check their guns as they moved forward. They did that anyway. Frank slipped the thong off his Colt and slid the revolver up and down slightly in its holster, even though he knew it would move smoothly. They walked up another hogback ridge. When they reached the top, they could look down the far side of the ridge into a shallow depression where a large campfire had been built. Frank and Wedge went to their knees to study the camp. The troop of rangers waited patiently behind them. A wild pig, one of the vicious breed called javelina, roasted on a spit over the flames. Several men stood around the fire, warming themselves. Others were sitting on rocks or on the ground itself. Frank counted 14 of them in all. Each man wore a sombrero, a short jacket, and tight trousers. A man strolled up to the fire, holding himself somewhat apart from the others. He stood there stiffly, with no one speaking to him, and Frank recognized the loneliness of command. This was the boss, and he wore a black mask. What appeared to be a silk scarf, the color of midnight, was tied around the lower half of his face. Instead of a tall sombrero, he sported a flat-crowned black hat that was tipped forward to conceal even more of his features. His jacket, trousers, and boots were black as well.
The Black Scorpion. You men bring up the horses as quietly as possible.
What are you gonna do?
If we attack them on foot, they'll jump on their horses and take off. I don't want any of them getting away. That's why I'm going to split the troop and leave just enough men up here to throw a good volley into them. That'll make them run down that hillside on the other side of the camp. The rest of us will be mounted and waiting for them when they come roaring down there.
I want to be on horseback.
Come on, then.
They began slipping quietly down the slope. The captain picked out the men who would remain on the ridge.
Give us 15 minutes to get into position, then open fire on those murdering bastards.
The rangers nodded in understanding. Wedge, Frank, and 14 other Texans moved farther back and reclaimed their horses from the men holding their mounts. Frank turned Stormy and walked the Appaloosa after Wedge. Again, they had to move slowly and quietly, carefully slipping around the raiders' camp until they reached the wide, dry wash that led toward the mountains. The clouds obscured the moon and stars, and even though the hour was relatively early, it was already as dark as midnight. One way the Texans could tell that they had reached the gorge was the sound of its gravelly surface under the horses' hooves. Frank could see the campfire at the head of the wash, maybe 300 yards away. The men moving around it cast wavering shadows in the night.
Ought to be now to the town.
Less than a minute after he had spoken, gunfire blasted from the top of the ridge overlooking the bandit camp. Loud reports broke the nighttime stillness, and spurts of flame split the darkness. Everything was suddenly chaos in the camp. Men shouted curses and ran back and forth and blazed away with handguns, firing blindly toward the ridge. Most of the men leaped for their horses, just as Wedge expected. A couple of them fell, cut down by Ranger Lead, before they could reach their mounts. These men were superb natural riders, though, and they had left their horses saddled. In a matter of seconds, even as they fought back against the ambush, the raiders were mounted up. With a thunder of hoofbeats, they charged straight down the barranca toward Frank and the waiting rangers. Captain Wedge's plan was working perfectly so far.
Hold your fire. Let him get closer. Wait. Wait.
The fleeing bandidos were almost on top of them.
Now!
Every ranger's hand was filled with iron. On Wedge's command, a volley roared out, the storm of lead scything into the onrushing raiders at close range. Some men cried out in pain as bullets ripped through them. Others toppled silently from their saddles. Frank held his fire, though he had the Colt ready in his hand. Suddenly, something about this entire situation seemed wrong to him. He pulled Stormy to the side as one of the sombrero-wearing bandits galloped past him, the high-crowned hat visible even in the poor light. Frank reversed the revolver in his hand, slamming the butt of the Colt down hard on the bandit's head. The man fell off his horse. That was at least one they could take prisoner, Frank thought. There might not be any more prisoners, though. The fighting was fierce in the gorge as guns spouted flame and lead. The muzzle flashes lit up the wash like the constant flickering of lightning. In that uncertain light, Frank saw another of the bandits race past him. This man was dressed completely in black and wore a flat-crowned hat. The Black Scorpion. Frank wheeled Stormy about and jammed his heels into the Appaloosa's flanks.
Wolf!
Stormy lunged into a gallop, and Frank leaned forward in the saddle as he gave chase after the leader of the bandit gang. Stormy thundered along the ravine, leaving the battle between the rangers and the bandidos behind. Frank had to listen closely to hear the hoofbeats of the Scorpion's horse, but hear them he did, and he knew his quarry was still in front of him. The hoofbeats of the Scorpion's horse were closer now. Stormy was cutting the gap between them. After a few more minutes, Frank realized he could actually see the Black Scorpion now, a slightly deeper shade of darkness moving against the lighter colored terrain. The bandito was only about 10 yards ahead of him. Suddenly, the Black Scorpion twisted in the saddle. Frank saw the move and ducked as the Scorpion fired. The bullet whistled over Frank's head. He knew he couldn't afford to give the Scorpion many more chances like that.
Take him, Stormy!
Stormy poured on the speed as the Black Scorpion fired again. Frank didn't know where the bullet went, but he and Stormy weren't hit, and that was all that mattered. With a final lunge, Stormy drew even with the Black Scorpion's horse. Frank lashed out as the bandit tried to bring his revolver to bear for another shot. He hit the Scorpion's arm and knocked it up, and the bullet went harmlessly into the sky. Frank veered Stormy even closer until the two horses' shoulders were touching as they galloped along. Kicking his feet free from the stirrups, Frank tackled the Black Scorpion, knocking him out of his saddle and off the horse. Both men fell, landing heavily and coming apart as the impact of landing made them roll over and over on the sandy ground. Even though the breath had been knocked out of him, Frank was able to get to his feet first. He lunged at the Scorpion, swinging a fist as the bandit tried to get up. The blow landed solidly on the masked face and knocked the Scorpion backward. Frank went after him. The Black Scorpion wasn't out of the fight yet. His foot came up, and his boot thudded into Frank's midsection. The Black Scorpion grabbed him and heaved, pivoting Frank over him on that upthrust leg. Frank flew through the air and slammed to the ground on his back. Now the momentum had shifted to the Scorpion as Frank tried to catch his breath and get out of the way of the man's rush. He rolled over and threw himself to the side, sweeping a leg out to knock the Scorpion's feet out from under him. Frank surged back to his feet. His hand went to the holster at his hip. He intended to draw his Colt and get the drop on the Black Scorpion.
Damn!
But the gun was gone, having slipped out of its sheath sometime during the rough-and-tumble fight. Frank didn't have a chance to look for it because the Black Scorpion tackled him, driving him back several feet. The two men grappled desperately. Frank had every confidence that he would win this brawl, until his foot came down on a fist-sized rock and it rolled under him. Pain shot through Frank's ankle as it bent far to the side. More agony shot up his leg as it collapsed underneath him, unable to support his weight. The Black Scorpion took instant advantage of this unexpected opportunity. As Frank fell, the Scorpion brought up his knee sharply. The blow caught Frank on the jaw and stunned him, stretching him out. The Scorpion pounced on him, slamming fists to his face and driving a knee into his stomach. Frank knew he had to turn the tide of this fight quickly, or he was going to lose. He never got the chance. The Black Scorpion snatched up a rock and crashed it against Frank's head. The terrible impact sent Frank spiraling down, 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 into a darkness even deeper than the shrouded night.